Hello everyone, my name is Dan. I'm an alcoholic and an addict.
Amen.
And it's so good to be here. Thank you, Adam, for asking me to do this. this is the first time I've told my story. I've done it years ago when I was sober before, but it's been a long, long time. So looking forward to it. I was nervous. I was fine until this morning, but then I got nervous. But it's all good. So I'm going to start at the beginning with my story and just talk a little bit about what led to me picking up the first drink. My family was pretty normal. I mean, you know, average upper middle class white family living in Dunwoody. My parents were still married, you know, I had a close family. My parents didn't drink. There's no drinking or drug use in my family other than me. You know, I'm kind of the black sheep in a way. My sister is now a doctor. She's very successful, married with a daughter. But, you know, the thing that was missing for me, I don't know, you know, I'm still discovering how much my childhood had an impact on my life. But, you know, it's like, you know, I will say that I experienced abuse when I was a child, you know, from a babysitter and, you know, friends of the family, stuff like that. And I don't know, from early on, and this is the first time, you know, you'll hear that I've been sober different times in my life for different periods of time. But this is the first time that I've actually been able to, like, look back on my childhood and see all the way back how these patterns were, like, way back when I was 7, 8, 9 years old, you know, how I was, even back then, I was feeling lonely. I was feeling just alone, you know. Just, I always had to do something to try to feel connected to somebody, you know. You know, 7, 8 years old, and I'm bringing stuff to show and tell. And even when there wasn't show and tell, I was trying to bring something so I could get some attention and people to notice me, because I just felt like I wasn't being noticed no matter what people did. And a lot of sadness and stuff. So, you know, my mom used to, both of my parents worked early in the morning. My dad was a federal employee. My mom was a teacher, and my mom would drop me off at school, elementary school, when I was a kid, at like 30 minutes before anybody got there. I mean, sometimes I got there and the door was locked and she just dropped me off. Sometimes I got there, it was just a janitor, you know what I mean? And during those 30 minutes, I would sit there and wonder what the heck was going on, you know. And that became a time when I started getting wrapped up in my head. And you know, I during those 30 minutes, I would break into different classrooms and turn over chairs when I get angry. You know, I had a lot of anger, a lot of just loneliness, and really it was a lot of fear. You know, just really hurt as a kid. And so by the time I was in fifth grade, I was in my basement at my house and feeling all those feelings and feeling alone. And I had this hobby of putting together models, and I got to be honest. I mean, I just didn't want to live anymore. I'm 10 years old, and I didn't want to live anymore. And so, I'm looking at the tube of glue, and it says, you know, intentional misuse by intention, you know, intentionally inhaling could be harmful or fatal. And I'm like, you know, okay, I'm gonna try this, you know. So I just went to town on this glue, and lo and behold, I started getting high. You know what I mean? And it took me away. It took me away from all the pain. It took me away from all the fear and all the anger I had. And it was a little scary at first. I was like, you know, this is what's going to happen here. But then I just went upstairs because I was so afraid. I asked my mom. I was like, what does the word fatal mean? You know? And she's like, you mean fatal? She's like, whatever that is, don't stay away from it, you know. But so, you know, I mean, fifth grade, I got caught in school sniffing glue, you know. Sixth grade, I get caught, you know, sniffing paint thinner, you know what I'm saying. Seventh grade, it's when I took my first drink, and it was really just, you know, my parents didn't drink, but they had a liquor cabinet for when people came over. I don't really understand well, but they had a liquor cabinet that they would share when people came over. Hey, you want to have a little wine or a little drink or something? And so, you know, I, I took a couple sips from the liquor cabinet, and I was like, God, how can anybody possibly drink this, you know? But as time went on, you know, I found out it really worked really well to be an escape. So, you know, I did the thing where I was putting water in the vodka bottle and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I don't know how they didn't find out about it. I mean, maybe they did. They just didn't say anything. They had a kind of a habit of doing that, of finding stuff and just not saying anything. But kind of pushing it away. But anyway, when I, you know, going into high school, I had some wisdom tooth surgery. Man, I love those pills, boy. And that set me off. You know, I had a friend that had a dad who had, you know, pain pills in their house. And then I guess I should stop at this moment and say my story does include drug use, in addition to alcohol. But, so, you know, just basically all through high school, I was drinking and drugging. I started smoking pot when I was 15. By the time I got to be a senior in high school, I had doing acid. I was snorting cocaine. I was drinking every weekend, smoking pot just about every day. Smoked before school, smoked during school, smoked after school, smoked before I went to bed. You know, so it was just rolling. And it got to be a time where it was like, okay, Dan, my parents were like, you know, you're 18 now, so guess what? You're not going to be living here much more. So it's like, what are you going to do? And they're like, we really think you should go into the military. You know, you should, you know, I think they'll, you know, I think that their thought was like, this will straighten them out. Because it was pretty obvious what was going on with me. I failed classes and just barely got through high school. But that kind of straightened me up for a second there. I was like, no, I'm not going to the military. I mean, I've seen Full Metal Jacket. I know what goes on there. You know what I'm saying? So, so I was like, I got to start filling out some college applications and end up going to Georgia Southern with a 1.6 grade point average. Yep, they took me. That I was desperate, I guess. But I'm like, it's a party school, you know? This is going to be great. But by the time I started, I was like, by the time that actually got through the summer and started, I was like, I was really getting off. During that summer, I really was getting off track with stuff. I mean, I wasn't, you know, I'm just going to be honest. Like, I know this is no different, but like my hygiene is the first thing that fails when I start getting high. Okay. So that summer, I wasn't waking up. I wouldn't take a shower. Okay. So, you know, all this stuff is falling apart. I'm not caring about myself anymore. You know, it's like, and I'm really afraid about leaving the house because I'm going to be by myself is the way it feels, you know? So I go into college and I'm like, okay, this is it. I'm going to stop, you know, this no more drinking, no more drugging, you know, I get there and the first thing I start hearing, you know, the first day I'm there, I hear people like, yeah, this frat's having that party and they're going Rush and they're doing that and this frat's having that party. I'm like, oh, well, that'll be cool. Let's try that, you know. I never went to a frat party, but I definitely got drunk, started drinking again. So I found people that were there that were of age that would buy alcohol for me. Then, you know, after a year, I started using other drugs, ecstasy, mushrooms. I mean, I was just desperate to feel okay. I had to change the way I was feeling, you know. I'll say too, you know, that there were people in my life that started being a part of my addiction, you know, girlfriends and friends and stuff, and they were a part. They were really, I don't want to use the word victim, but they were definitely hurt by my addiction, you know what I mean? And they were part of it. I mean, like, I was addicted to the sex part of it, the relationship part of it, the attention they gave me, you know. So I got about a year into college and I had stopped going to classes, and then they just barely passed me by. And the next year I came back into college and I'm 19 years old, and I went to classes for like a week, and then I'm hiding, and, you know, I went off the deep end with mushrooms. You know, I'm out there with a flashlight every night looking through cow pastures, looking for mushrooms. And, you know, and it's weird because, like, there were people in my life that cared about me. My parents cared about me. My girlfriend at the time cared about me best she could, but I still felt alone. I still felt like I wasn't enough. I still felt distant from everybody, and wasn't able to talk about it, you know. And so the day came when I had to decide, you know, I was halfway through my first quarter there at school, and it's like, you can either get 100 the rest of the quarter and make a 50, or you can drop out. So I dropped out, and like a week later, I was like, I need to go to treatment. I need to get myself straightened out. I mean, things were just crazy. And I had a bad trip on some mushrooms, and it really scared me. And anyway, so I went into treatment for the first time. I was at Bronner Hospital back in 1989 when it was there, and went to inpatient and outpatient. And this was my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was the first time in my entire life that I was able to feel connected to anything. It was the first time that I was able to look somebody in the eye, even when they knew stuff about me. I was able to tell my story, told them about things that I never told anybody about, you know, the sexual abuse and other stuff. So, so I got out of there, went in a halfway house, stayed at a halfway house. Then I got together with a girl that was in the program and the outpatient, and you know what happened there. So a little bit distracted. About 6 months later, started drinking again. So, you know, the next couple of years, I was in and out of AA. At one point, I had like two and a half years, and I met a girl in Alcoholics Anonymous. 12 and 12 talks about boy meets girl on AA playground. That's pretty much what it was. And we got married. She got pregnant. By me, and I'm so glad that we chose to not have an abortion with her, but we got married, and it was hard, very, very hard. I was freaking out, basically a dry drunk, and I was a dry drunk. Stopped going to meetings. I was sober about 2.5 years, stopped going to meetings, and about 4 years into my marriage, without having been to a meeting in a couple years, I did something really violent in my house, and it's something I really can't go into detail about, the result was I went to prison. I accepted a plea. Their first offer to me was 40 years to do 18 in prison. And we got it down to 20 to 10. It was a very, very difficult time in my life. It was strange because, like, after I felt all the feelings about you know, being isolated from society, you know. So here's a guy that feels isolated anyway, you know, feels distant, feels alone, and then all society says, "Hey, man, you're out of here. We don't want you around us." You know, that's the way it felt. And I just really felt like God had just crumbled me up like a piece of trash and thrown me away, you know. And the first year I was there, I was like 29 years old. And the first year I was there, I met a minister that came in, and he helped me understand that it was not God's punishment that brought me there, but really his love. And that was really, may sound kind of strange, but like I've come to find out that, like, with my relationship with God, my higher power, it's like he loves me enough to do whatever it takes to get me closer to him. And that's what it took for me. So you know, I'm here to tell you, prison isn't a fun place. Nobody likes to be there. I have opinions about it that I won't use this context to share, but you know, it's a tough place. I was able to not drink, believe it or not, or not drug for the entire time I was in prison. And I want to fit in with you guys and say, you know, no, man, I was so angry, like I just stole from people, that's the facts. I didn't drink, I didn't drug. I don't know if I was just so afraid, or I just, because I dove into the church so much and went to Bible studies, and you know, I was going to church 2-3 times a week and leading Bible studies, do all this different stuff, you know. I don't know, but there was drugs and alcohol there. But I wanted to keep myself separated from people, and try to use my intelligence to stay safe. After I, when I got released from prison, I just wasn't ready. There was no program, and I understand it's changed a little bit, but like, I was able to get through alive, which is really good. A couple different assaults or whatever you want to call them, a couple of fights, you know, but I was able to get through alive, and I got out, and I just wasn't really ready. And man, all that loneliness and all that fear and all that anger, it just was there waiting on me. And I thought I was going to be fine, you know. I mean, my first thought when I got out of prison, because I filled my head with so much religion, was, man, I'm going to get out and I'm going to get some people saved. You know what? We're going to get these people right. And it didn't work out that way. So, a week after I was out, I relapsed again, and I'm headed down, and I'm skipping. Now this starts like the skipping along the bottom phase of my drinking. It's just like, you know, I would go into the program, go into the AA, meet people, make phone calls, you know, go a little, go in and out, but I never like applied myself to the steps. I do want to say that, like, in previous time when I was sober, when I first got married, I did go through the steps, but I also rested on my laurels afterwards, and I also left something out of my fourth step, out of my fifth step, and I didn't share that until I got sober this time, and I'll share more about that in a minute. But so, you know, I'm in and out of AA, I'm back and forth, you know, I'm on probation, I've got to do these classes, I've got to pay these fines. My parents are just like, you know, the day I got out of prison, they took me to Walmart and dropped like $1,000 buying all kinds of stuff for me, and, you know, they're, you know, trying to keep me supported this whole time, you know, so it was like a year that I didn't hardly work at all. I was afraid. I stayed in my house. I didn't go anywhere. I went to my classes. I made sure to do that. I went to my probation appointments. But other than that, I was just basically inside my house, just, you know, isolated, wasting away. And so I'm going to share some good stuff. There's during this time, one of the bright points of what happened at that point in my life. I was 39 years old, just got out of prison, and I had decided, whether it was for religious reasons or what, that I was going to not date anyone for the first year I got out of prison. I was like, well, I need to, you know, really take time and focus on myself and whatever. You know, so I didn't, that was my excuse for staying home. Well, there's no, you know, whatever. So after a year, my parents had come down for my birthday, and it was right at about a year after I got out of prison, and they're like, let's take you out for lunch, and we go out, and there's this waitress there, and I'm like, you know, I think she's kind of like flirting with me here, you know, I'm not sure what's really happening here, but then afterwards, I go home, and I say, God, you know, and I'm going to tell you that during this time I was still like praying and still thought I had a relationship with God, but it's only until I came in this time that I really started getting close to God. But anyway, I prayed to God, and I was like, God, send me a lady that can really understand me, that can get me, you know, basically help me stay sober, you know, and help me walk with you. And so about a week later, this girl calls me, and she's like, hey, there was a prison minister that came in the prison where I was, and this girl was had been in prison. And the weird thing about it is, so the last year that I was in prison, so I'll say the last 6 months, I had a roommate, right? Cellmate. a little different, but. And he had a pen pal that he would write in another prison, and I was like, hey man, you know, hook me up, you know, you got some other people I can write, you know? And he had a locker. When he opened his locker, he had a picture of this girl on his locker, and he would open the door, and I'd see her. I'm like, man, you know, I need, you know, let me write somebody. Well, then I decided I wasn't going to date anybody, and I got out of prison. And so anyway, then this girl calls me after I've prayed this prayer, and we get to talking, and she's like, yeah, I used to be in prison, and, you know, we kind of hit it off because it was like she was on the ankle monitor, and, you know, love at first sight. What can I say? So it was like she would have to be under at home at certain times. So she's like, I can't go anywhere. And I'd say, okay, I'll call you and we'll talk. And she kept calling me. So after we'd been talking a little while, we met on Easter, and I met her. And then after a couple weeks after that, we're talking a lot, and we're sitting at a train station, at a MARTA station, and she's showing me her scrapbook from prison, and she turns the page in her scrapbook, and it's the picture that was in my cellmate's locker. And God has sent somebody in my life without me even realizing what was happening. And there have been several times that has happened in my life that's just been by total grace. And so I was like, wow, man, this woman is really somebody sent from, I really believe that God sent her into my life. She can't get me sober or keep me sober, but God did send her into my life. And so about a year later, her and I got married, and that's been a great thing. I was still skipping along my bottom. When we got married, I think I stayed sober like a couple years. And there were some things that happened with her health. She was having seizures fairly often. It went on for about 9 months. and I just didn't know how to handle it. I was relying on religion and going to church and, you know, praising and reading and putting on this image of being somebody that's godly when I really wasn't, and I didn't know how to handle life. And one day she was in the hospital, had some painkillers, and I took them, and it was like putting gas on a fire. I mean, that was like 2013. Over the next 5 years, I proceeded to steal, I proceeded to lie, I proceeded to cheat, to do everything I could to take away that feeling that I felt of being totally incapable of handling life. And I thought that if God can't give it to me at church, there's no way I can get it. And I'm just I'm not capable of living. And I'm just going to try to live it up until I can, as long as I can. There were times that I left my wife at the hospital. So she'd say, you promised me you're not going to take them. And I'd say, yeah, I'm going downstairs to the pharmacy to get your pills, and or walk right in the bathroom after I picked them up and use them, and leave her at the hospital, no ride to get home. Just all the stuff, man, all the stuff. and, you know, it's been a journey getting back to AA. I was still going in and out of, after that, 2018, I went to treatment, and I thought, man, I was cured. I really had it. You know what I mean? I went to this place called Mirror Lake in Tennessee, and I was like, man, this is it. You know, I mean, there was kind of this divine thing there, but it was temporary because I did not continue with my program. I did not continue going to meetings. I did not get a sponsor. I did not work the steps. And, I thought again that I could get sober on what I know now to be religion rather than a relationship with God. And it's been, that's been kind of a theme for me, like trying to get sober on just that, just going to church and trying to do the right thing and fitting in there and trying to make sure I did what they thought I should do. And so over the next 3 years, I probably went to six or seven treatment centers. I've been to Peachford, Ridgeview, different places trying to, you know, I'd get sober for a month or so, then I go back out, and just, it was just like that until finally, I was working a job where I was doing merchandising at Publix's, and I was getting up at like 4 o'clock in the morning because I had to be there at five, and it was like in West Atlanta, and I was taking a lot of pills, and this time I had gotten on this stuff called Kratom. And I was buying it by the kilo. I figured, you know, why spend the money to go to some convenience store and pay so much for it? Why not just buy it by the kilo and like make your own capsules? You know what I mean? And, you know, I just never could find it, be able to buy it with the vegetarian capsules because, you know, those are less harmful on your stomach. But, I had pocketfuls of pills going to work, and I get there in the morning to work, and I'm by myself just putting stuff up or whatever, and then on the way home I'm nodding off going home, and I go home and pass out, take more, you know what I mean? And there were several times that I would wake up, my wife was, you know, a witness to this. I'd wake up in the middle of the night gasping because like I'd taken so much, like I'm not just nodding off, like I'm not breathing, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, there were several times during this time too where, I created an event that would force, well, I would create this, all this drama so that my wife would say, get out, just get out. And I'd be like, yes! And I'd go spend 3 or 4 days in a hotel, spend money on a credit card and all the stuff, right? But when I was working at this job in 2021, I was on the way home and one day, and I've been on this route home several times over the last couple months. And I had started talking to somebody in NA because I was trying to get my wife off my back, kind of, you know, like, I'm calling him. But as I was talking to this guy in NA, he was like, you know, maybe you don't need to really go to a treatment center. Maybe you just need to get involved in the program. And I'm like, no, I just really, you know, I think I need to kind of dry out a little bit. And so anyway, we're having this conversation in my car, and I'm riding up Highway 75. And all of a sudden I see a sign for a treatment center while I'm talking to him about going to treatment. And it had a sign with this person on a sign like this, like saying something about recovery. And it's a place called Twin Lakes in Monroe, Georgia. And long story short, I called them, and it took a couple days for me to get up the willingness, and I kept trying to prove to my wife, like, I kept trying to say to my wife that I wanted to go to treatment, but she was like, you don't need to get, just stop. You know, like she said, like, just stop. You don't need to go to treatment. You know what I mean? And I'm like, no, I do. But I never, like, actually would do it. You know what I mean? Like, it was kind of in my control to do it, but I never would do it. But then when I saw that sign, and I just knew I needed help, you know? And I mean, the fact that I had been in AA and I had seen you guys get sober, and I felt a little bit of a connection here, is what drew me back. And so I went to Twin Lakes, and I did the deal. I mean, I really applied myself to it. The first thing that happened, though, I met a roommate, fortunately not a cellmate, but a roommate, he and I were like friending each other. He's like probably 24 or something like that, but we had gotten to talk a lot, and we were talking one day and in the morning after breakfast, and the groups would start like at 8 o'clock and go to like 8 o'clock at night. You know what I mean? It's like long groups all day. So it's like 7:30, and he's like, you know what, man? You know, let's just stay here and talk. Let's have our own meeting, you know? And I'm like, I mean, it kind of makes sense. I mean, it's, you know, two people sharing, you know, wherever two or three are, he's in the midst, and I'm here, you know, it's like, sounds pretty good, you know? And then it just, I don't know how, but I just got a realization, like, you know, because they're announcing the group, and I'm like, they're like, come on, meeting makers make it, come, group's starting. And I'm like, you know what? All my life, I've been doing what I thought was right. I've been trying to do this and do that, trying to make it my way, trying to do things my way. Maybe, just maybe, I ought to do what somebody else has done. I mean, this whole place is designed for me to get sober and help, and they have experience, and they have, you know, tested, tried things. So I said, okay, from that moment on, I went to every group and started meeting people in AA, started working the steps, and right before I was leaving, I didn't know what was going to happen with my marriage. I was unsure if I would be able to handle being at home and staying sober. And I was praying a lot about it. I had no idea what to do. And really, all things were pointing to me needing to go home financially and otherwise. So I was scared about it, really scared, because I wanted to be sober. I really wanted to be sober. And I was going to this Bible study at the treatment center, and this girl is like, that went there, it's this lady, she says, hey, check out this book, you know. So she showed it to me, and I was like looking at it, and there was a scripture in the book, and I'm like, really? No, I don't think I want to read that. So I go on. 2 days later, I'm watching this movie, right? And it's about this lady gets bit by sharks. And in this movie, at the treatment center, there was a Bible study in the movie. And in the movie, at this Bible study, the same scripture is being taught about. And the scripture says, I know the plans that I have for you, plans for good and not of evil, to give you a future and a hope. And it's just one of those God moments where I was like, man, thank you, God, because I have no idea how to do this. Please help me. And I made a decision to come home. I came home and started coming to the How place and going to other meetings in the area. Eventually, I've kind of just sort of focused on the How, on Breakfast Club. I really, really like this meeting. Not just the familiar faces, not just the format, but just the recovery that's here is something that I don't see in other places. And I have been to other meetings, a lot of other meetings. So when I first got out of treatment, I had a plan. I was, I had every minute scheduled with the first day I got out. And I wasn't like, I have to do this or do that, but I was like, the first thing I'm doing is I'm calling this guy that I got his number from the treatment center that said he wanted to be my sponsor. That's the first thing I did. And my wife was like, Dan, can't we talk? Let's talk. I'm like, no, I got to call my sponsor. You know what I mean? And I started learning that it wasn't going to happen without me, but like I needed to kind of stay out of the way of what God was going to do, if that makes any sense. You know? So I just started doing the deal, and I had a sponsor who was like really big on the Big Book. And when I had gotten sober before, I was like, I wanted to be a Big Book thumper when I came back. I was like, I wanted to be this. It wasn't like I don't know how to explain it, but I don't know. I thought like, I'm going to be this special person that like looks at the Big Book and studies the Big Book. When I came back this time, I was like, so I got this guy that's like all about, you know, Big Book, alcoholism, blah, blah, blah. You know, so I was like, okay, let's do this, you know. But like 3 weeks, 4 weeks, maybe a month after, maybe longer, we had been meeting every week, and we were still on the foreword to the book. And but I did know Ebbie Thatcher's middle name. But, you know, it was just, I mean, maybe that works for other people. I mean, and he told me, like, this is the only way I know how to do it, and this is how I do it. And I said, well, I think I need somebody else. It took me 4 weeks to fire him. I just didn't want to do it. But one day I came into a meeting here, and one of my first meetings actually at the Breakfast Club, and a guy came up to me, and he's like, he says, hey, so after the meeting, he's like, where are you from? I said, oh, I live here in Woodstock. He's like, no, like, where'd you grow up? I said, Dunwoody. He's like, really? So did I. Okay, well, yeah. He's like, well, where'd you go to high school? I said, Peachtree High School. And he said, so did I. I said, well, he said, where'd you grow up? I was like, well, I grew up in Waterford Subdivision, you know. He's like, I grew up in Waterford 2, right behind you. So I was like, I think this guy's going to be my sponsor. So he became my sponsor. That's Trey. He has helped me a lot. And I finally started going through the steps, and I got thorough and honest about it. I realized that my spirituality had been lacking. It's like the second step in the 12 and 12 says. It talks about how it has to do more with the quality rather than the quantity. You know, I had a lot. I had a lot of quantity, you know what I mean? But I didn't have a whole lot of quality. I was going to church. I was involved in my church. I was getting high and drinking, but I was involved there. And I mean, it was a positive thing. I just wasn't able to connect there because I wasn't being honest. I was not taking inventory. I wasn't asking how I had harmed people that day. I was not asking myself where I was resentful or afraid or anything like that. You know what I'm saying? And so what's happened is I've started learning how to really let God be in charge, you know, like really surrender. This morning is a good example, just because I did really good not being nervous until this morning about speaking. And it was just like, God, you got to take it. You know what I mean? I do this imagery thing about letting go of a balloon. You know, I write something on the balloon, I let it go. And it's just, things go so much better when I let go. You'd think I would learn, but I still do take my will back at times, and I want what I want when I want it. I have my, you know, like my character defects get in the way sometimes. I still have times where I want recognition from other people. In planning for this talk early on, when I first got asked, I was like listening to other talks and like, how can I say this? And they'll laugh, and then this will go like this, and that'll happen. And then I actually thought, well, maybe I'll just talk about how to give a talk. I mean, I've had so many, listened to so many talks. Maybe I'll just. So, you know, it just came, you know, this time, one of the turning points for me was I got honest about what I did to go when I went to prison. I got honest about the things that I had done that led up to that, the different aspects of my character that would plague me, I guess you could say. And, you know, I got honest. I told Trey everything, you know, and it's, man, it is so good to stand right here today and know that there are no secrets in my life. Like right now here today, not one person, but somebody knows everything about me. There's nothing in my life that I've not told somebody at some time. And to live in that freedom day by day is something I never thought was possible. I never thought I was really worth it, you know. And I appreciate the fact that, you know, God, AA loves us before we can love ourselves. And just even by being here and being able to come and hear the language, you know, that is enough for me almost. I mean, like, just hearing how people open up and talk about real stuff. It was something I wasn't really getting in church, you know. And hearing that, it makes things real for me. It gives me hope, you know. And so today, you know, I'm making every effort to make amends with my wife. It has really been a trial. I make mistakes, you know, but I do what I can do on my side of the street, and I have to leave that the rest up to God, you know. You know, I'm grateful for the steps and for my higher power that's brought me to this place. It works if you work it. Thanks, I'll pass it back.